Hey, welcome to the show. On today's episode, we have Kyle Cox. Kyle is a jazz songwriter, singer, performer based out of Nashville.
Kyle recorded multiple live performances here in the Rusick studio with us. If you want to check those out, go over to your YouTube channel at Rusick Podcast. You do a lot of like at home recording stuff, right? Like all the stuff you do.
Everything like, is. Yeah.
So all your stuff you do at home.
Yeah.
Oh damn.
Literally everything other than like the Live at Rudy's.
Yeah.
Which is obviously a
live at Rudy's.
Live at Rudy's. Yeah, it was recorded there. But otherwise, like, yeah, it's all. It's like kind of, it's like streamlined and remote work too, like. Mm-hmm. I'll text it to. Are we recording now? Are we in action?
Right. Yeah, there we're rolling.
We're good.
Oh, okay, so this is like actually the podcast now.
Yeah, we're good. See, we always try and like ease sneak into it up a little on bit because otherwise it's like people get freaked out.
No, it's fine. I just wanted. I was like, I don't know if I needed to save info for the actual thing.
You're or good. You're good to go now.
Yeah. No, the recordings are, they're all done at my house, and they're kind of, it started when my wife was pregnant with our first kid, who'll be 7 in February, but it basically got to a point where I was like, I can't afford to, like, record records anymore.
Mm-hmm. It gets pricey, like, renting studio time
and
stuff. And
I have a kid and stuff, and I'm like, I don't have time for it, I don't have money for it. And so I was like, well, if I want to keep doing this, which I do, I need to do it myself and figure out how to be scrappy. And so I started with just one microphone, just like a AEA ribbon mic, and the Perhaps One Day record that came out in 2019, I think, was all just one microphone pretty much.
Oh, wow.
And then there's no drums on it because I didn't know how to do drums. And, mm-hmm. It wasn't like a stylistic choice. It was literally just like, okay, I don't know how to do drums. And I'm also like, can't afford to pay a drummer, so I'm not going to do drums. But it's like guitar, vocals, which are all on one mic and they're all one take because at the time I didn't know how to, like, I knew how to like play to a click and do it separate and stuff in other studios, but I didn't know how to get the machine to do that for me. And so I was learning on the fly. And I just sang it all one take into one mic, played at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then I would just do it 5 or 6 times and pick the best one. Then I would email that to my bass player and he would lay down bass for it, email me his track. I'd pull it in the session. And then I did trumpet at my house, just like in the living room. And then
you play the trumpet?
No, I didn't do that. My trumpet player came over.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You have Robert Gay plays for you, right?
Oh, you know Robert?
Oh, there you
go.
Yeah,
so we had a short stint, little jazz group.
Nice.
It didn't last too long. We did a certain night of the week every week at American Legion.
American Legion, we did like a Jazz Wednesdays for...
Dang,
and then Robert played with us.
Yeah.
It kind of fizzled out, but yeah, he's a great player.
Yeah, we only probably did it for like 6 months or so, something like that, but it was fun. It was a good time.
He's great. Yeah, he actually is in New York City right now. He's been up there for about a year. So this new record, he did all the trumpets in his apartment up there and just emailed them to me. So I'm like so streamlined. I'm just like... I feel like I'm more like a casting director than like a producer. I can just kind of find the guys. I track the scratch. And now it's like all to click and all separate and all that stuff. But I track it. I send it to them. I send them references based on like the vibe I'm feeling. I music direct them. And sometimes I'll kind of write out parts or I'll like do like a MIDI horn part or whatever and be like, hey, do this, but do it cooler. Like, and you can kind of riff on this.
Some,
you know,
kind of guide.
Yeah. So I'll like do little guides and stuff, but mostly I'm just like, hey, at this point you've played on 70 of my songs. Like, you kind of know what I'm looking for. And here's the demo. Track your part and I'll pull it in. And that's kind of how I do it.
It's always a good benefit, like having one person you play with, mm-hmm. for a long time, because you just start to know each other so well, like, you know,
there's
what each
shorthand
other want
there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally. Especially, I think a lot of that's dependent on the style of music too, but for your kind of music, I feel, mm-hmm. like that can be such a benefit.
Totally. Like my bass player, Paul, who also skates, by the way. But he and I have been, he's played on literally almost everything I've done, even pre-jazz. Like, he's been on music of mine from like 2012, 2013, something like that. And so it's been a long time, like over 10 years of him playing bass on my tracks. Yeah, it's really fun having those guys. And so that's how I do it. That's how I've been doing it now for.
That's cool. So like the new one you sent me, that's like all just.
Yeah, it's all remote.
That's cool.
Honestly, yeah, that, I wouldn't have guessed that. Like, I know. It kind of has like a live in the room type of feel to it, which I really love.
I really like it too. I think part of that, how I've managed to keep that vibe is I'm really into good enough. Like, I'm not really into like perfect. And so like, I'm not editing drums onto the click. Like, if it's loosey goosey, if it's real bad and everybody's kind of hitting all over it, I'll tighten that up for sure. But for the most part, I'm like, I let the human element of it float along. And then also my buddy Frank, who I was telling you about, that mixes all the stuff, keeps it really live and vibey feeling and raw. And so, but yeah, it's literally all just done like from my couch for the most part. Nice. And
that's,
they text.
That's a hard style of music to get away with that, but it really works.
You absolutely do.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. Appreciate
fantastic.
It. It's been a good system, and it's been an affordable system, which I am way more at this point in my life. I'm like, well, I've been fortunate enough to be able to do music full time now for like probably 10 years. But I've had to be very, very, very scrappy in order to do that. And it's been a system that's allowed me to do it. And I'm more so into the aspect of like, all right, I'm going to keep doing this. Like, I'm not going to let obstacles get in my way. Like, I'm not going to make excuses for why I can't do it. I want to make another record. And at this point, technology is so like accessible. Like, the only reason that you wouldn't make a record is because you're just making excuses not to. And so, that's kind of been my thought process.
Yeah. I feel like the one through line I have found for all of the professional musicians that we've had in here who, for better or for worse, this is what they do. This is their only stream of income. And you know, it takes various forms, but music is that exclusive thing. All of them have just said point blank at one point or another sitting here, well, this is just what I do. This is just this is the decision that I made. So you have to make it work.
Right.
And everyone finds unique ways of going about that. But to me, it's a good sign when the people who are in that situation all kind of have that same thing to bring to the table, which is, well, this is what I am going to do and I'll find my way of doing it. But it seems to really just be more of a conscious choice than anything else.
Right. And I'm a firm believer in
making it work.
I'm a firm believer in like the why over the what. Like, if you don't have a good why, whatever the what, no amount of what is going to sustain it. And so like my why for making music isn't like wanting to be famous or wanting a ton of people to even connect to my stuff or whatever. It's like, my why is like, I know that I'm a better husband, father, and friend when I'm creating than when I'm not. And so like, I'm less self-absorbed. I'm more present with my kids. I'm like more supportive of my wife, and I'm more available for my friends and all these things. And when I'm active and when I'm in process and when I'm creating, then when I'm not creating, I'm more easily embittered. I get depressed easier. I'm not as present. I'm always kind of floating somewhere else. And so for me, that's what's been sustaining me, where it's like, okay, this is my why. This is why I do it. I do it because it makes me a better husband, father, and friend. And so now any sort of what is possible to do it. And so it's like, well, what, so if this is my why of creating, then it's a what or a how of how I'm going to do it. And it's like, at that point, it doesn't even matter. It's like, I could just write songs and record them on my iPhone, and that would that would be fine, you know? Yeah. And so,
yeah, if you have a good enough why, you'll find a way.
Exactly.
Make
and
it work.
And so that, to me, I feel like has been the biggest sustaining driver to be able to have done it for so long and do it at so scrappy and be able to kind of get through the shit times and the low dollars and the rejections and all of that stuff. And now continue to put stuff out even while watching my kids and all those things, you know?
Yeah. Go
for yourself.
One thing you posted on your Instagram story one time that really stuck with me is I can't remember exactly what it was, but you like calculated like the average amount of time you had per day, like while juggling like all the kids stuff and all that to do music, and it was something like an average of like 37 minutes or something like that.
Yeah. It was basically I have about 2 to 3 hours a week that I can make music, which equated to about 35 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Which I find extremely impressive, like given your output, like new albums and shit like that. I feel like I have so much more time than that and only get a fraction of what you do done.
Well,
how do you manage your time that well? Because I sure as hell can't.
Yeah. I mean, I think it really has to, like, there's a lot of things I say no to.
Okay.
A ton of stuff I say no to that I feel like that aren't bad things, that I feel like a lot of people who don't have kids and don't have this like desire to put out a shit ton of music, which I do, like say that they get to say yes to. So like I barely watch TVs or movies, like barely, and I freaking love movies and I love TV shows so much. And like, but I'm asleep by like 9:30 every day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm up at 5:30 every day. It takes my wife and I like 4 viewings to be able to watch a 90-minute movie. Like, it's seriously, we'll watch like 20 minutes of it and then we're just like, all right, I'm gonna go sleep. And so like I'm saying no to a lot of stuff that like I would, that aren't necessarily bad things. Like I'm not hanging out with friends as much as I probably would even like to, you know? Because I'm like, okay, like I can either watch a show right now or a movie, or I can go out with some friends, or I can write lyrics for 20 minutes and like knock this out really quick. And I'm just saying yes to those things. And it's often in the middle of doing stuff too. Like, I mean, I'm saying no to like listening to music in the car a lot. Mm-hmm. Like I'll drop my kids off at their school, or I'll be headed to pick them up or whatever. And instead of putting on a podcast or putting on an album, I'm listening to my iPhone demo and letting that song kind of run in, or that progression run in loop. And I'm writing lyrics in my head and like, that sort of thing. And so I'm making decisions like that. I'm up at 5:30 writing lyrics, like on my phone in bed. I like to write when I'm a little bit tired, 'cause I don't like edit as much. I'm not as critical of what I'm writing. I'm too tired to be critical. I'm just kind of like more stream of conscious.
And that's so interesting. Yeah.
So I'm writing really early as well. And then like when my daughter goes down to take a nap, it's like, all right, I can take a nap, or I can like decompress and boob out on my phone, or I can grab my guitar. I can head to my little studio space. I can hit record and I can track a scratch. And I'm saying yes to the scratch track 80% of the time, as opposed to saying yes to TikTok or yes to a nap or whatever, you know, myself.
Gotcha.
And so that's the part that's like, I feel like I do say yes to those other things, but I feel like that's been the difference. And I'm actually like, I've been recently, the last few months, thinking a lot about being consistent in boring things. And so like I see you at the gym a decent amount.
I haven't been going enough lately, but I try to sneak it in when
I
can.
See you at the gym. And I've been thinking about it in context of a lot of different things, not just with creativity, but also like in context of being in shape or whatever, you know, in context of raising quality kids, hopefully, in context of having a healthy marriage. And I think a lot of the best things that everybody wants, like they want like a healthy marriage, they want good kids, they want to be ripped and in good shape, they want a ton of records, they want $1 million, whatever, that is the result of years and years of boring consistency.
Totally.
You know, yeah. Like it's investing your money for a shit ton of time. It's like disciplining your kids in healthy ways, or being present with your kids, or playing with their stupid toys again for the 8,000th time. You know, it's like, it's showing up and going on a regular date night with your wife. You know, it's eating healthy every single night or every single day, mm-hmm. as much as you can, you know, and the same with making music. It's like, and it's showing up doing the scratch track that takes 30 minutes or whatever, instead of doing the whatever thing that you want to do, you know? And yeah. So that to me is like been the process and the mindset that I've kind of been really meditating on a lot recently. It's just like boring consistency. Everything you want is kind of on the end, other end of boring consistency.
Totally.
And I think the funny thing is actually, like, let's just talk about it in terms of the gym. I think the ironic thing is like the thing that you want when we're talking boring consistency and go to the gym is to be ripped. I actually feel like when you get to that place, the thing you really want is just to be a person who shows up to the gym regularly. Like getting the thing doesn't act like when I make the record and having the record done, which is the thing that I want, like, I don't actually think that's really the thing that I want. I think the thing that I really want is to be somebody who shows up and creates and is in process on a regular basis.
Totally.
That's actually the thing I want. And the result of that is multiple records, you know? But I don't know. So I've been thinking about that quite a bit.
Totally. Yeah. I think usually the stuff that benefits you the most is usually not the stuff that is immediately gratifying in the short term. It's the boring shit you don't really want to do that mm-hmm. kind of gets you the furthest. It took me a while to realize that.
Yeah. I mean,
and starting to figure it out.
Yeah. I don't think it's a lesson that I'll never not continue to learn either. You know, like we went to my parents' house for Thanksgiving and I didn't work out at all. I like skated like maybe 15 minutes and I ate so much like dessert, like so much bad food. And I was like, damn, this is pretty sick. Like living like this right now.
In the short term, it is.
In the short term, for yes. sure. And I was just like,
the exact feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was like, when I came back and I went to the gym today, I was like, man, definitely, can't do that very much.
Yeah.
It also just gives you, when you get out of that routine, you miss it.
For sure.
And it makes you appreciate the taste of pie.
Right. You know what I mean? Totally, dude. Like, yeah.
Otherwise it's almost gluttony. It's mm-hmm. not, you can't enjoy things to the same depth I find in life.
Right.
If I don't hold myself to those strict standards and I don't make sure that I have that routine that I don't deviate from.
Mm-hmm.
When you do deviate from it, you find that you can, as long as I think you have a healthy relationship with it,
yeah,
and you find yourself deviating in those moments, you can actually enjoy it and you can realize, oh, okay, this is something that I can, in this brief moment, pause, enjoy, and then I'll get back to the routine.
Totally.
And for me, that's a hard place to get to.
For sure. It's a balance for sure. And having a healthy balance and being able to enjoy it when you're not in the routine is great. But I mean, this is something I feel like I've seen a lot recently and it's kind of like a trendy thing to say, but it is an element of like choose your hard, you know, like being a creative and putting out a lot of records, if that's what you want to do, that's really hard. Also being a creative who doesn't do anything and doesn't follow through with that stuff, that also is really hard.
Totally.
You know, and it's like choose your heart. It's like, Are you going to be somebody who works really hard to make a bunch of music? Or are you going to be somebody who is like bummed and depressed that they're not making a bunch of music? Both of those things are very difficult. And you just got to choose which one you're willing to...
Yeah, absolutely.
...to be a part of, you know?
Yeah, one thing that we've talked about quite a bit on here is when you do... When you do decide that this is what you want to do, for me, a great moment of realization as a young person was realizing that music is art is like anything else. It's just hours clocked in. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, because there's this element of, for lack of a better word, mysticism involved with art, because you are going from nothing to something. And whenever that is involved, there's going to be just an element of unknown, but it's like anything else. It's like if you wanted to be a carpenter, it's like if you wanted to be a mathematician or insert anything there. It's just hours clocked in with that thing. And all of the people that I think are worth listening to are people who have put that time in. And for me as a young person, realizing that was like the greatest news in the world, because you think, I can do whatever I want to do. I can do that. If I'm invested enough and I decide to be that crazy to put all that time towards that thing.
Right. No, totally. Yeah. The showing up is really, it's a hard thing to do. And it's like, I hate waking up at 5:30. At this point, I'm like fine with it. I've been doing it now for a few years, but like since my daughter was born, basically. But it's just, that's the time I get to be able to do the thing, to be able to show up and do the work that I want to do. And I don't always want to do it, but I really love the saying of like, put your ass in the seat where your heart wants to be. Like, just get there, just yeah. Like show up, wake up and sit down and be, you don't even have to do the thing. Just walk in there and give yourself the opportunity to do it. And nine times out of 10, you're going to end up working on something anyways, you know?
Just deciding to show up goes a long way.
It does, dude. 100%. It definitely does.
So you were saying that you've had a lot of different ups and downs with music and deciding that this is what you're doing. I find for everyone that is in this seat, it is very multifaceted. There mm-hmm. are a lot of different ways that we keep the ship afloat. For you, what are the things that you've found that are the most effective for doing that over the years? Or at least at this point in your life, what are those different ways in which you've split your time and attention with music?
So like, as far as like being able to stay in process and stay creating, I think, well, pre-COVID and pre-two kids, I was touring a lot. I was out on the road like 100, 120 days a year.
Okay.
So a decent amount of time, like on the road playing shows. And it was very scrappy, very DIY, like driving myself, rental car, playing house shows, 30, 40, 50 people, sometimes way less than that as well. But sleeping in guest rooms, sleeping on couches, those sorts of things. and then COVID hit. And I lost all of those. And so I had to actively stay in process in order to even do the thing mm-hmm. for me. And so,
yeah, once all that momentum is gone, you just feel like, God, right. How do I get that traction again?
Right. So when COVID hit, I recognized, dang, like all my income, albeit very small, but I was making it work, is a very active income. And now that I can't play any shows, I'm literally making $0. And so I was reassessing. I was like, I need to figure out how to create some passive income, and I need to kind of see, okay, well, what do I really love to do? My favorite thing to do, truly, of all of it, I do love playing shows. I do love being on stage. I liked touring. I didn't really love it, but I liked it. I liked it enough to do it a lot. But the thing I really loved when I was honest with myself, is writing, recording, releasing, repeating, just doing that over and over and over again. I was like, okay, so this is what I really want to do. I need to figure out a way to create some income from being able to do that. And I was able to find a nice home with film and TV sync and being able to get, placements and licensing and royalties through those things. And so that afforded me the ability to continue to write, record, release, and repeat, paying for records and then paying better than I was actually getting, when I was touring a bunch. And so that really helped keep some of the momentum, and it got me excited about like waking up early and writing. Mm-hmm. And it got me excited to continue to create more, essentially like assets for these places to use in their productions, you know? And like, I think I'd still be showing up very regularly to write, record, release, and repeat, if it wasn't going well in that space. Because again, like what I talked about earlier, like my why is a very strong why. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately the driver, but having found this little home where, the music that I enjoy creating, which is this like old school jazz songwriter, kind of croonery, lounge, cool jazz sort of thing, also has been finding a nice home in the sync world too, has been really nice. And so that's also like adding extra fuel to the fire. Cause, it is nice to get affirmed by these other places and stuff.
And that's that's a very smart way of going about it and distilling it down to what are the core elements of what I'm doing here that I enjoy. Because I find for a lot of musicians that can be part of the problem is you understand going into it. Okay. We're in 2024. The market we're dealing with is going to be all over the place. We're going to need to be able to grab everything around us and make it work. But really distilling it down and figuring out what is the thing I'm getting the most joy of. I think that's a really smart way that's a very, very smart way of going about it.
Yeah. And I think kids kind of force that too. Because my time, like we were talking about earlier, became so limited. I had to, like, I couldn't do everything. And in fact, I could barely do anything other than like watch my kids. And so I was like, well, what if I could only do one thing, what would that one thing be? And it's like, well, I freaking love the feeling of writing a song. I love the feeling of watching that song develop into a recording, into a production. Mm-hmm. And I love releasing that song for the public to enjoy. And then doing it all and rinsing and repeating and doing it all again. Like, and so I had to like ask myself that. Otherwise, like I don't know. I don't think I would be doing anything. Like, kids kind of forced me to like really come to terms with like, you can only kind of do one thing.
Yeah. We just had, just a couple weeks ago, we had my buddy, Rye Bradley on, who's a songwriter around town. And he just had his first kid, recently. And we were having a very similar conversation about it. And I do think it really does focus the mind. One, just because you only have so many hours in the day, like
for sure.
But I do think there is a focusing of the mind that occurs where you think, okay, if I only have this many hours in the day or this many minutes in the day, what can I do to not only give me the most bang for my buck, but for me to actually enjoy what's the thing that I'm going to get the most out of.
Right.
In the style of music that you're working in, which I love, I love that music.
Thank you.
Who are your biggest songwriting influences, sort of generally speaking? Cause I mean, everyone knows as you develop and you move through life, we all have different styles of music that we love and different phases where we go through, enjoying different kinds of music, but who are the long lasting ones? And then who are the songwriters that work within the framework of that particular style of music that you like?
I mean, I would say, like, favorite just songwriter of mine ever of all time would be John Prine. Like, I love John Prine. I love his lyrics. I also love that he was never very good at guitar. And like, I've seen him, I had the privilege of being able to see him live, I think 3 times before he passed. And he's not a great player or singer, really. And I, but he's such a good guitar or such a good songwriter. And I really love the simplicity in his lyrics that hold very profound truths as well. And so that's something that I've kind of always held myself to a standard lyrically, kind of putting myself against him. However, now genre wise is a very different genre for sure.
Yeah. When do you start getting like first getting into the jazz thing?
Yeah. The jazz thing, for me, so I've always enjoyed listening to jazz. My dad listened to jazz a decent amount growing up. But when I actually found this record, called Country Willie, that was pretty heavily jazz, old school jazz vibes, especially vocally. There's a lot of really interesting like background vocals and oohs and ahs happening on that record. And I've always loved what Willie Nelson did, where if you're a typical like cowboy chord guy, you could figure out 80%, even 90% of the chords in a song, but he'd always throw one chord in there where it would be like, wait, what was that? Yeah. You know, like he'd throw like just one flat nine or one diminished or something, just like in the middle of this country song that your everyday like country songwriter dudes, at least that I was like, and me included at the time, I was like, I cannot figure out what this chord is. And so it initially started being like, I wanted to be the guy who was doing that, you know? I wanted to be the guy who was writing these folk songs that also had a diminished chord in the middle of it. Instead of just going from G to A minor, I wanted to go to G sharp diminished to A minor, you know?
Like, I think you just articulated what it is I've been trying to do with music this whole time.
Yeah, and so that's kind of what I wanted to do. Like, I loved that, and I never intended really it to dive into this, like, pre-war jazz vibe.
Yeah.
But I... as I was learning these chords, I bought this book, which is a great book, like less than $10 on Amazon, Mickey Baker's Jazz Volume 1. And it's just all these chords and very simple exercises. I was listening to that or working through that. And as I was working through that, a buddy of mine, this guy, John Fiorentino, actually, great guitar player himself, and a music enthusiast, knows like everything. He was like, oh man, he's like, you should check out the Ink Spots if you haven't heard the Ink Spots, and you should check out the Mills Brothers if you haven't heard the Mills Brothers. And like, I heard those and I was like, oh, actually this is like what I want to do. Like, I don't want to just do this like country thing with like,
so you were doing like country stuff before that?
Yeah, I was doing like just folk kind of finger picky Travis Picking style stuff, you know, and like traditional folk songwriting sort of thing. I did that for a while. And that was mostly what I was on the road with. Like I did go out on the road with my first like jazz record in 2019, right before COVID, and nobody really got it or understood what I was doing. And I don't blame them, 'cause I had just done like 6 or 7 years of touring folk stuff. And then all of a sudden I started doing this like pre-war jazz
standard. It's a great
standard
record. I was listening to it this past week, and I think it's a great sounding record. The production's really unique on it, but
one mic. I had no idea what I was doing, and that record today is like doing better than it's ever done ever. Wow. Like, it's getting like 6,000 streams a day. It's like crazy.
It is a very, very good sounding record. I was listening to it, and I thought, God, this is, it sounds very, very idiosyncratic in a wonderful way.
Yeah, it's definitely like technically not a well done thing, but I think that really worked. It's mixed in mono, which I thought was really fun as well.
I'm a sucker for some mono mixing, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
I'm a fan.
That was a fun little thing to do as well. And I kind of like used the vibe and the old school mixing style and all that stuff to kind of mask the errors, the technical errors in the recording, because I didn't really know what I was doing. But but yeah, so that's like kind of what led me to doing the jazz thing fully, is when and that's also to continue with your question of like other people within the genre. It was like the Mills Brothers and the Ink Spots were like the initial like, oh, those are the dudes, you know. And then it expanded, and like, I mean, Chet Baker Sings is like one of my favorite
Totally.
For sure. Yeah, like that, good one. That record's incredible. And I really loved the, like the Coltrane, Johnny Mathis record as well.
Okay.
That one's really, it's very loungy and like almost corny, but it's, I think it's awesome. And then this new record, which is more like New Orleans street jazz influenced, has a lot more like Preservation Hall jazz band influence in it. And even like some like Leon Redbone, like vaudeville kind of vibes thrown in there as well. And so, but yeah, I mean, whenever anybody asks me like the jazz influences, I'm going to say like, like Chet Baker, freaking love Frank Sinatra, I love Billie Holiday, like any great vocal standard person.
Yeah. Yeah, I think jazz from like a harmonic perspective can be a little bit intimidating to get into. But you definitely seem to have like a really strong grasp on all that.
Yeah.
Kind of classic jazz harmony. Where does that come from? Did you just like learn a lot of standards or?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like you'll understand this. I feel like I've kind of approached it like I'm not trained at all. Like I took my first jazz lessons actually like a year ago. And so I put out a ton of jazz music prior to even having any formal training. I feel like I've kind of like punk rock skateboarded my way into it. Like I was just kind of like DIY'd my way into jazz where I was just like, oh, that's kind of sick. And I've seen somebody kind of do this sort of thing. And I'm like, I wonder if I can do that. You know, like you see somebody do like a frontside flip or whatever. And you're like, huh, wait, I think I could maybe do that, you know? And like, and just kind of figured out your own way to do it, even if it's not technically great. And I think that's kind of what I did is where I was like, I don't know. I just like what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
I'm going to try
to copy what you hear.
Yeah. I'm going to try to do something like that. And I've always kind of felt like no matter how hard I tried, for example, to write like a Mills Brothers song, like if I learned, like I would learn some of their songs and I would try to write my own like Paper Doll or whatever, you know? And no matter how hard I did it, I'm still writing it in 2024, you know? And it's like, it's going to have my influences and me in it that it's not going to sound like them. And so I kind of just trusted that I would still just sound like me, you know?
Totally.
No matter how hard I tried to like mimic something else. But that's like that's kind of how I figured out the harmonic structure of those songs and how those things worked. I learned a number of the Chet Baker sing songs and a number of the greatest hits from the Mills Brothers.
Do you know like theory or anything or just kind of all?
Not really, not jazz theory for sure.
Yeah.
When I started taking lessons, I was having them teach me like drop two voice notes and stuff. And so I did start learning like some of those things and I obviously like 2-5-1s and like all these things, but like, and minor 2-5-1 or whatever. Like I know all those for sure.
Yeah.
But like my players, like my piano player, for example, is like, he's like a virtuoso. Like he would never say that. He's extremely humble, but he is like the party trick type dude where he's like, he can be in the other room and you can slam your hands on the keys and he'll tell you every single note that was played and in like what order they were hidden and stuff like that. He's like that level. And he is like a trained jazz dude.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny cause he'll tell me like when I'm writing stuff or when I give him stuff to play on, he's like, man, I love like how you approach these things. Like you're just so different than these like traditional jazz guys. And I'm like, I'm trying to be like these traditional jazz guys. Like it's so, like, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, nah, man, it's like, he's like, that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying, he's like, but they would normally do like X, Y, Z and you're doing this other thing over here. And I'm like,
I think that's like a good thing about not being formally trained and especially coming from like other genres of music is you bring your own flavor to it because
for sure.
If you have someone who is formally trained and goes down that route, a lot of times they can just sound like your cookie cutter.
Totally.
And also with that style of music as well, approaching it the way that you have, it's almost melody first.
Right.
And to me, that's the melody. That is the song. Everything else is framing. Everything else is arranging.
For sure.
If you can approach it that way, that can go so far, because a lot of people, especially in that style of music, put the cart before the horse, and all of the theory and all of the intentionality is there.
Right.
But if you don't have a good melody, if you don't have a good song, it's just, it's, you don't have anything.
Totally.
So that can be a great benefit in that way too.
Yeah. I think that's been something that's benefited me in the sense that, like, I cut my teeth writing folk songs, you know, and like, and I was very, very focused on lyric and melody for years writing that type of music, you know? And now going into this jazz thing where it's like, I'm trying to sing, like I'm trying to hit that flat nine with my voice, and I'm like trying to hit those moments. And I do occasionally, but it still is like coming from like a folk roots background, which I think makes the melodies more accessible. And I also, it makes me feel a little more like punk rock about jumping into the jazz scene anyways. Like I do feel like I'm kind of this like, sort of anarchist element of this like nerdy genre music, yeah. You know, but of just like, yeah, whatever. I don't know. I dig that. Like, I really respect the legends. I love all this stuff or whatever. I'm doing my best to pay the respects. I just don't have like that formal training.
Yeah. With a lot of that stuff as well. It can feel with any style of music, but I think it happens oftentimes in jazz, it happens in country. It happens in a lot of these styles of music that can be, their peaks are almost snapshots of historical moments within culture, where when we try to go back to that, it can feel very static and it can feel dead almost. It's this, I think the people who do the most interesting things within those styles of music can pay respect to what's come before, but also understand that we're trying to keep this alive. We want it to be a living thing. And so I think what you're doing is really is the right way to go about it. Whereas you're living in that world, you're playing within that sandbox, but at the same time, it does feel present. It doesn't feel like you're just rehashing something that's already been explored. It feels like you can push it somewhere new and you can try to get to new places with it. I think that's where music just in general is,
and I think
most
it's
interesting.
Almost easier sometimes coming from that angle, coming from like the opposite, because I kind of learned jazz through a more like formal way. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I have to do the opposite where I'm like, no, this is like just a generic,
yeah,
basic thing. How do I put my own spin on this? You know what I mean?
I mean, you gotta like, you're friggin' sick.
I try, but yeah no, it's, I find it almost difficult to like put my own spin on it.
I think ultimately, like, I feel like I'm a songwriter first anyway, like always. Mm-hmm. And I that's what I love to do, is I love to write songs, and I really would love to have something I've written be considered like part of the Great American Jazz Songbook one day. You know, I really am trying to write new standards, best I can. But it's just like, it's coming from my makeup, you know, it's coming from my background. Mm-hmm. and what I've done, and I'm trying to pay respect, and I'm also like pushing it forward in the DIY punk rock fashion I am, you know.
It has your voice. I mean, yeah. To me, it's like if I were to just use two random comparisons, Hoagie Carmichael, Roger mm-hmm. Miller, two of my favorite songwriters. I don't consider Hoagie a jazz songwriter. I don't consider Roger Miller a country songwriter. I just think they're both really fucking great songwriters. That's just the medium that they generally mm-hmm. work in. I think if you had Roger write a jazz song, I have a feeling he'd come up with a pretty damn good one. And totally. And the inverse, I think, is also true. It's just a lot of times, it's framing, it's arrangement, it's how you present the thing. But songwriting, at the end of the day, is songwriting. And we have, there are certainly specific skill sets to be developed within certain genres of music styles, mm-hmm. just the way that we approach melody and lyric. But when it comes down to it, and you just not on a nuts and bolts level, it's all songwriting. And so if you can do
sure.
one, you have the skill set to at least tackle another.
Yeah. It's been really fun, to be honest, just doing it the way I'm doing it and trying to like, just write the best new standards I possibly can, coming from me and being as honest to myself as I can in the process, you know, and being not trying to like be anything other than me, you know? It's been really fun. I really, really do enjoy it. And like I said, like my favorite thing to do is to write, record, release, repeat. And like, I'm going to like, I have this new record coming out in 2025. Like I've already started thinking about the one after this. I've already started kind of writing it. You know, it's like, I don't know. I just like staying in that process. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure like kind of vibes will change depending on the season of my life or whatever I'm listening to. But,
Where's the new record at currently in terms of release and all that?
The one that I've sent you.
Yeah, yeah, that's done. Good to go.
Yeah.
When's that coming out?
That one is called Listen Up. And that one will be, I'm pretty sure the first single will come out sometime in April, okay, 2025. And then I'll release, just because the way streaming and algorithms and stuff go, I'll probably do like 6 singles. And have a single a month come out until September and release the whole album in September.
Gotcha.
That's the tentative plan right now. I'm still doing a little bit like of passing it around to industry people I know. Mm-hmm. But nobody knows what to do with this genre in this current time. And then the labels and industry people who are doing stuff within this genre aren't really doing like the old school vibe, like modern takes on old school vibe, like I'm doing. They're more doing like very modern jazz.
Gotcha.
Very, yeah, free, crazy style stuff.
And I mean, I think the good thing about the current day is you really don't need the labels anymore.
Don't.
Like, you can get your own shit out there without them.
It's been, I mean, I don't know how or why, but I'm very grateful. Like, my listenership has really grown the last, like, 2 or 3 years for sure. And very consistently. And so like, I don't care to have anybody kind of come alongside, mm-hmm, unless it makes sense. And so like, I still like to pass it around and try to see if anybody's vibing or if anybody's like, oh, I get what you're doing. But otherwise, like, I'm so totally prepared to just do it the way I've been doing it.
Is the band on the new record the same as the band on, the Rudy's one? 'Cause the Rudy's band is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Is that the same generally
all
same
the players
lineup,
or, you add on? Yeah,
who do you, just if you want to shout anyone out, who do you have on those records?
My band is so Will Padgett is the piano player. He and I write actually a number of stuff together. My records I like to keep just my own songwriting, but we do write singles together and stuff that I've released, like Happy on My Own that I recorded.
Very nice.
He and I wrote that together. But so Will Padgett is my piano player. Paul DeFiglia is the bass player. And then on horns is Robert Gay, who we were talking about. And then this record has a clarinet player on it, Dan Hitchcock. And he is on my music for the first time with this record. He did do one single with me that just came out like in October, mm-hmm, called Coming Back to Me. Yeah, that's what it's called. But prior to that, he had never been on anything. And so those guys are the guys that are on the Rudy's album as well.
Gotcha.
Dan did not play that show with me because there was no clarinet songs, but the live at Rudy's was Will, Paul, and Robert. And then my drummer is Ian Strombino. And Ian, this is the first record of mine he's on as well. However, he has been on a few handful of singles prior. But the first time he ever played with me was the Rudy show.
Oh, very cool.
And nice. So I had a different guy playing drums that played on my Who Cares album. So the Rudy show was a release show for the Who Cares record. And the guy who played on the Who Cares record, Brad Covington, great drummer, was just too busy and too slammed. Couldn't do it. And kind of felt like he couldn't really do much in regards of like recording more with me anyway. And so he sent me and along to Ian and was like, well, maybe hit up this guy. I think he'll do great. And he and I have really hit it off, and Ian killed it at the Rudy show. He's the drums on all of that. And then he's been the drums for everything since then as well. And so That's the band. Nice. Yeah.
Who, this is a totally random question. Who's playing bass on the self-titled album from whatever oh, year wait. That is, 2018, I think.
Oh yeah. That, like the Kyle Cox and the Old Sound.
Yeah. Yeah. Great bass on that one.
Same guy, Paul DeFiglia.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Really, he's awesome. He, is my age. He's actually a couple years older. He's 41 or 42. I think he's 41. He went to NYU, got a double bass degree from NYU, played in the Jazz Haunts up there. He's somebody who is, he's very inspiring to me. Has a studio and he produces a bunch of stuff, but he takes lessons every single Sunday, like via Zoom, from some old jazz haunt dude up in New York City. And he literally takes like a lesson every single Sunday with this guy, an hour long lesson.
No wonder he's so damn good.
He's amazing. And so he inspired me to actually start to take lessons. And so I did, I probably only did like maybe 10 or 12 lessons, like one a month for about a year.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to get back into taking lessons. Getting that second opinion and kind of shift in perspective. You know,
it was really helpful for me for sure. I wish I had more time. That was the only problem for me is like I said, I can really only pick one thing to do. And like, I was taking these lessons and then I was like, okay, I can either practice my lessons in this little window or I can like track scratch for this song that I'm trying to do for this. Yeah, yeah. And so it was like, I was competing with myself within those times. And so I kind of phased out of lessons, not because I didn't like them, but because I just didn't have right now the space to really properly practice the lesson from the week before. I think once both of my kids are in school full time, that will be something that I will continue to do. But at the moment, only my older one is in school all day.
Okay.
And so
nice.
I'm still hanging out with the younger one most of the day. And so I can't really sit there and like practice my drop two voicings while also playing with Bluey toys, you know? And so like, it's a little tough. But that was the bass player on that as well. And he's amazing.
Very nice.
He's so good.
One thing I think is fucking super cool is the song you had in Skate Parts recently.
Oh, thanks.
Braden Hoban's parts.
Yeah.
How'd that come about?
So, Leo Romero and I are good, real good buddies. One of my best friends. So, for those who don't know, he's a pro skater, legendary skater. And so whenever they've gone on skate trips and stuff, I've gotten to meet those guys, and that's how I've gotten to become bros with, like Braden and Dakota and David and all these guys that have been rolling through, and Jeremy. And so Braden, Braden actually likes to write songs too. And he's just kind of started writing music.
Okay.
Plays guitar. He's got a really interesting, cool voice. Actually, I like his voice a lot. And he's been kind of texting me like song voice memos a little bit here and there and getting opinions on these things. And, he just has enjoyed my music that I've been writing as well. And, I don't remember when he asked me, but so X Games decided to do the Real Street, parts again.
And his won, right?
It got gold. Yeah.
That's dope.
Wow. Yeah. So Braden called me and was like, "Hey, what do you think about me using one of your songs, one of your older songs for this like X Games Real Street part? Would you be down with that?" I was like, "For sure. Like, why would I not be down? Like, yeah, definitely. Anything you want, super down." And so he used Love Remind Me off of that self-titled record. That's like more folk Americana sounds. And that one won gold, which was so sick. And then back in October, my wife and I were actually on vacation and we were hanging out, waiting to get dinner. And, Braden FaceTimed me and I was like, "Whoa, what's he doing?" So I answered, and Sarah, my wife, is real good friends with all them too. And they've all like crashed at our house and like we've fed them dinner and like they're buddies with my kids and all that stuff. And so we were just excited to talk to him. We're like, hey, we're on vacation and having fun. What's up? Mm-hmm. And it was Braden and Leo on the FaceTime, and Braden was like, how would you feel about, like, I'm putting out this rock star part through Thrasher at the end of the year. Do you want to write, like, kind of score a more cinematic, emotive piece to the second half of that?
Yeah, so you composed that, like, just mm-hmm. for his part?
Just for his thing.
Did you have the part first, or did you, like, just... how did that work?
Yes.
Did you have something to work off of? Or?
So I said yes, of course, and I was hyped. And Leo's song actually is the first song of the part.
Yeah.
And so that was really fun. Kind of just feels like a little brotherhood part altogether, which is really fun. So Braden would text me, like, he texted me like 3 or 4 different reference things, this Chemical Brothers song that he really likes, and kind of from the late 90s that was like acoustic, kind of mixed with like some synth stuff. And and it was kind of like emo, kind of like 90s alt emo vibe a little bit. And so I tried to lean into that with the acoustic, and then I got a rough cut of the edit, and it was much shorter at the time. It was probably about 3.5 minutes that I was going to write to. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of sent him some ideas that were like half-baked ideas, like not fully realized for sure. And I was like, what do you think of these different ideas? And then he was like, oh, I really like where this one's heading, and I think this could be sick for the part. And so I leaned more into that, and I really fleshed it out and came up with basically a much shorter version of what you hear in the actual thing. Mm-hmm. And then, so I sent it off to the film editor, this guy, Dan Stalling, and they loved it. They were hyped. And then like a couple of days later, he hit me back. He's like, hey, we really love it. I think it's sick. We need like it to be like twice as long, 'cause there's so much footage, which is insane.
Yeah. The part was what, like 15 minutes or something?
It was like,
right?
11 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
11 minute part, which is great. 2 songs, like
crazy,
insane. And so the thing I wrote was already like 3.5 minutes, and he was like, I need like another 3 minutes for this. And I was like, okay, let's see what I can do. And so I did a bunch of back and forth with him. I got they sent me the full edit of basically what is now live.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of wrote to it, but I mostly like, I wrote to it a little bit at the very beginning and landed on the vibe. And then Braden was like, do that vibe. And so then I stopped looking at picture, and I just kind of wrote what made sense musically. And then I sent it back to them, and I was like, hey, tell me if you're like, all of this is flexible structure wise. So if like you want the guitar to come in much later, we can do that. If you want this like B section to be twice as long, we can do that. You know, everything's very flexible.
Yeah.
And then they came back with like, we need this much more time. So then I spent a couple days really trying to figure out how to make it so much longer without making it sound repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
And then did that. And I didn't really look at edit footage while I was doing it. I did look at a little bit, only for like length.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not so much for like timing of clips. And then,
yeah, 'cause I figured that would be easier to edit the skating to the music.
Yeah, so the skating
the other way around, for sure.
It's exactly what happened. But there's a couple magic moments, like when he was skating in the lines and stuff, that like every pop hit right on beat.
Nice.
That's like, really cool.
I didn't really try to do that. It just happened. And we were just like, the first time I saw that moment, I was like, oh man, I got like goosebumps. And I was like, that was sick. Like how everything popped, like at the same time, like my beats and chord changes happened and stuff. And it was just fully accidental. Yeah. And so, did that. And then I sent it off to them. They really loved it. Got the thumbs up from them. They got the thumbs up from Thrasher and from Rockstar. And then they sent me the final, and I felt pretty good about it, but I felt like it could sound better. And so then I hit them back up, and I was like, hey, do I have time to like punch up this mix?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I don't think it sounds great yet. And they're like, you have like a day and a half before like it has to be closed. And I was like, okay. And so I sent it off actually to Frank and I was like, can you punch this up for me? Mm-hmm. And he did. He had like, oddly, he had this specific 2-hour window, nothing going on. I got him everything like immediately. He punched it all up. He sent it back to me. I sent it back to them and they loved it. And that's what's on Thrasher now.
Nice.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, growing up as a skateboarder and then also being a musician, I feel like that's like a dream to have your music in a skate video.
It's so fun. Leo actually had Happy On My Own in like a Thrasher, like Instagram hard post.
Oh, okay.
Like just for like a 1-minute reel.
Nice.
And that was the first time that's ever happened for me. And he did it as like a kind of, like a surprise, like he did it to surprise me.
Nice.
And it just popped up one day. I got tagged in this like Thrasher post and I was like, wait, that's cool. What?
that's cool.
It was so fun. But then now having like these clips and like Brayden is kind of like at the top of the skate world right now too.
Yeah.
And so to
dude,
have
that part
it,
was fucking bananas.
It's insane. It's so insane.
That guy's something else.
He's crazy. And so to kind of be like associated with him in this way during like kind of the peak of his skating at the moment and being at the peak of skateboarding world in general, and like it's very wild, especially for just like a dude who's almost 40 still just like trying to hang on to kickflips and 50-50s. You know, I'm just like, this is so sick to be associated with it in that way, you know.
Well, that's killer.
Yeah, man,
that's
rad.
Really killer. Yeah, I'm really glad that we had you on. Like, this has been
thanks.
This has been a ton of fun.
Yeah,
it's been awesome.
I've had a great time. I really appreciate it a lot. I've had a good time getting to know you and like skating and hanging out and watching you rip on the guitar. It's been amazing. This has been great to meet you and sit here and talk.
Super,
for
super
sure.
Nice to meet you. I mean, like, again, the thing that I just love about this is just meeting cool people who make cool stuff. And I'm really, really digging the stuff. Brian was, you know, telling me about your music. And so I was checking it out the last few weeks. And I think this is really fucking cool.
Thanks, man.
I feel like you're the first non-country guy we've had on here, too. So it's nice to get a little more diversity.
It's
been nice to shake it up a little bit, you know?
It's fun to be the little jazz dude in a country town, you know? And it's like, I don't know, I've always kind of done stuff countercultural anyways. And it's like, and I'm always attracted to these weird subcultures. And so like skateboarding, you know, and like, so it only feels natural to kind of be like this DIY jazz dude in like a pop country city, you know?
Totally.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Keep doing it, man.
Thanks, dude. Appreciate it a lot.
Hell yeah.
Sweet.
Is that it?
Yeah. Thanks, Kyle.
For sure.
That was a lot of fun, man.
Enjoyed that quite a bit.